Let's go back now to Seder Shoftim. There's many hints to the month of Elul. Words, sentences, that the first letters of the words spell out Elul. The most famous, Ani L'Dodi, V'Dodi Li. There's another one that's not so famous, and that is the following. In the Parsha of Ori Niklaf, the cities of refuge. Did we speak about this? I don't think so, no. I was going to, but I didn't. The cities of refuge. So, a person kills somebody unintentionally, and it says that God brought this to his hand unintentionally. He kills somebody unintentionally. Then he has to run away to a city of refuge and stay there till the Kohen Gadol dies, and then he can go back home. And if he's not in that city, then the relatives of the victim are allowed to kill him out of revenge. And if he's in that city, they can't. Then he's protected. Okay, that's basically the idea of Ori Niklat. In that Parsha of Ori Niklat, in Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah says, Va'asher lo tzadah. If a person did not premeditate this murder, V'ha'elokim ino liyado, and God brought it to his hand, killed the person unintentionally, then the samti l'chamakom, I'll give you a place to run away to. So the words, ino liyado, aleph nun hei, ino liyado, to his hand, God brought it to his hand, the samti loch, and I'll give you a place to run away, the first letters of those four words, ina, liyado, visamti, loch, is Elul. So the obvious question is, what's the connection between the month of Elul and running away to the cities of refuge? In the past, we've said different ideas. Today, I want to say a much simpler, different idea. What the hint to Elul is in those words. The first two words, ina, liyado, implies that many times God brings things to people's hands beyond their control. This person did not premeditate, he didn't on purpose kill somebody. So it wasn't his free choice. It happened because of his rashlanus, he was negligent, wasn't an accident, but it wasn't something that he chose to do. It was something that happened, that God brought to his hand. That implies that many things in this world, and we've spoken about this in the past, are not our free choice. That God gives us circumstances to existing and to functioning. Many of the things that affect our free choice are not our free choice. For instance, we didn't choose to be human beings, right, or to be animals. We were born human beings, and what's expected of a human being is more than an animal. We didn't choose to be Jewish unless you're a ger. You didn't choose to be Jewish. You were born Jewish. You didn't ask to be Jewish, simply speaking. You were born. And what's expected of a Jew is more than is expected of a non-Jew. You didn't ask, if you're me, to be a man, right? Or to be a woman if you're you, right? Or some of you. Most of you. Right? And men have different responsibilities than women, and women different responsibilities than men. So that wasn't something that came because of my free choice. That God forced it on me. And he gave me those responsibilities. And similarly, people were born into rich families, into poor families, people born with disabilities, people born with there are a million different things that limit a person's free choice. Where you live, right? A million things that limit our free choice. So on the one hand, God gives you the framework within which that framework you have free choice. But you don't have free choice on the framework. So our free choice is limited. It's not open-ended. We have to function within the parameters that God gave us, which many times are beyond our choices. They're things that we are given and not things that we chose. So this sentence represents these two sides. On the one hand, ina liyado, God set up the situation where you killed somebody unintentionally. Now, within those parameters, you're going to have to run away to the city of refuge and use it properly. Now you have choice. You can run away, you cannot run away. You can stay there, not stay there. You can listen to what God said within the framework that he gave you or not listen to him. But you didn't create the framework. God brought the framework to you. And this is as it is a whole year. The whole year, on Rosh Hashanah, One of the things that is judged on Rosh Hashanah and that's decreed on Rosh Hashanah is what our framework will be for the coming year. What circumstances are going to be given to us, not because of our choice, and sometimes not even because of things we've done in the past and choices we've made in the past. Sometimes yes. Sometimes it's a result of choices we made in the past, good or bad. But whatever it is, God gives you the circumstances every year, different circumstances. And that's not within the realm of your free choice. How you function within those circumstances, that's your free choice. So these two parts of the sentence represent that. In all the yado, God will bring it to your hand. But the Samti Loch, now I'll give you the ability to make the right choices within that framework that I gave you. That's what the month of Elul is about. The month of Elul is to look back over the year and to see what circumstances God gave us and if we function properly within them or not. If we exercise our free choice to function properly within the circumstances that God gave us or not. So that's another hint to the month of Elul. Let's go now back to last week's Seder. Last week's Seder, there is another hint to Elul, and that is not in the letters of the words, but in the context of what happens. So the person goes out to war, and he sees an attractive woman, and he takes her captive, and he brings her home. And he wants to marry her. She's a non-Jew. So he can't live with her, according to most opinions, immediately. He has to take her through a process, a 30-day process. Bring her home. She removes her beautiful clothing that the women used to wear, the non-Jewish women, to seduce and entice the enemy soldiers. So you put on a plain clothing, and you shave her head. And you either cut her nails or let her nails grow wild, right? Two different opinions. And she sits in your house for 30 days and cries for her mother and father. And after that, if you still want to marry her and she wants to convert, then you convert her and you marry her. And if not, you send her away. That's the parasha. I don't want to go into the parasha. That's the parasha, okay? Someday, if you want, we'll discuss. What does that have to do with women and women's rights or whatever? But right now, the Zohar Chadash says the following. If you go out to make war on your enemy, that is a hint to the constant battle we have with the Yetzer Hara. Who's the enemy, the worst enemy? The Yetzer Hara. You go out and fight your Yetzer Hara. And sometimes the enemy has captured the Eshet Yifas Toar, this beautiful woman who is a euphemism for the neshama. Sometimes a person's neshama is captured by the Yetzer Hara. And you want to capture her back. You want to bring her back home. Get her out of the clutches of the Yetzer Hara, of the Goyim, and bring her back. And make her Jewish. Bring her back home. So, bring her back to your home where she has been thrown out of. The neshama is thrown out of your home when she becomes subjugated to the Yetzer Hara. Now, how do you do that? First thing is, shave her head and cut her nails, which means that when the Yetzer Hara captures the neshama, it pollutes it. So take away the pollution. Cut the hair off, right, and let it start again, and cut the nails off. The nails and the hair represent the pollution that the Yetzer Hara puts into the neshama. And then take off the clothing. The Yetzer Hara clothes the neshama in dirty clothing. Take off that dirty clothing and substitute it for nice clothing. And then let the neshama cry for her mother and father. Mother, father is the Ribono Shel Olam. Mother is the Torah. Cry, let your neshama cry for the disgrace that you disgraced God and disgraced the Torah when the neshama was subjugated to the Yetzer Hara. And after that, the neshama will be able to come back and be one with God. All of this refers to the month of Elul. It says that she should cry for a month for her father and mother. That refers to the month of Elul. Because during the whole month of Elul, the Jewish people were distanced from God after the sin of the golden calf. Their neshamas were polluted. Their neshamas were dressed in dirty clothing. And throughout the month of Elul, we cry for how much we disgrace God and the Torah. And eventually, on Yom Kippur, we are able to once again remarry God, where the neshama becomes one with God again. That is what the Zohar Chodesh says. Just to add a few points, what it means, when the Yetzer Hara subjugates the neshama, it pollutes it with the hair and the nails. What's the idea? The hair represents the pollution of the mind. The Yetzer Hara pollutes the neshama with deos kozlos, with false ideologies, false ideas. That's represented by shaving the head. And it pollutes it by having it do things that are not proper. That's the pollution of the hands. That's the nails. So cut the nails and cut the hair. And then the Yetzer Hara also pollutes the neshama by clothing it in dirty clothing. The clothing of the neshama is the midos, the character traits of a person. Those are represented by his clothing. B'chol eis yuba b'godecha levonim. At all times your clothing should be white. Means you should have midos tovos. So take off the bad midos that came because you were subjugated to the Yetzer Hara. That's the clothing that was dirty. And then you have to regret and have remorse that because your neshama was subjugated to the Yetzer Hara and you did all these terrible things and thought all these terrible things and had these bad midos, that you basically insulted and disgraced God and the Torah. And after that, the neshama can once again cleave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is the avod of Elul, to, after a whole year of being subjugated to the Yetzer Hara, to free yourself from the Yetzer Hara and go back to God, to do tshuva, to go back, return. Okay, that's what the Zohar Chodesh says.
And then the Goyim can say
it. What? Yeah, Goyim can also do tshuva, but they're not required to have a Rosh Hashanah, right? They're judged, and they could do tshuva too. The people of Nineveh also did tshuva. Okay, in any case, I want to give you another connection between the crying of this captive woman for a month, since the Zohar Chodesh compares them, but another idea, another way of looking at it. Many times, people do things not because they intellectually do them l'shem shamayim, they're the right things to do. They do them because they want to do them, because they have a desire to do them. And many times, things that you desire to do are good, but you didn't plan it and do it because it was good. You did it because you wanted to. And that's a very dangerous thing, to do things because you have a cheshek, because it looks good, because it's enjoyable, or whatever. Again, not everything that's enjoyable or that you want to do is wrong. But you run a tremendous risk that if the motivation for doing things is not because you've come to the realization that this is the right thing to do, but it's because it's a thing that you want to do, then maybe tackle what you want to do and think is the right thing to do is not the right thing to do. Why? Because Hashochad Ya'aver Enei Pikchin V'Yisalef Divrei Tzadikim. Shochad, bribery, what you want, what you desire, right, is bribery. And it distorts your vision. And also, Hataivos, the desires of a person, blind his eyes from seeing the truth. If you really want something, you're doing it because you're motivated by desire, by lust, then it's very possible that you'll be blinded and think that what's right is wrong, and what's wrong is right, and what's sweet is sour, and what's sour is sweet. So now a person has functioned during the whole year and done many things over the year that he's done out of the motivation of desire. So what do you have to do now? Now you have to want to do tshuva. You want to repent, right? And you want to now, before Rosh Hashanah, before you can do tshuva, you have to recognize if you did anything wrong. You can't repent if you don't know you did something wrong. How do we know what sins we did? Because many of the times we think the sins we did are mitzvahs, because we have been fooled by our Yetzer Hara, and we've done things that, should I turn this over? We've done things that we wanted to do, but not necessarily are those things the proper things. We thought they're the proper things because we were fooled by our desires. So therefore, the first thing to do is v'hadvesel tov beisecha. Take this eshet yifas tor, this beautiful woman that you had this desire for, and bring her into your house. Put her within the framework of Torah and mitzvahs, and take another look at her. and see, right, sans the desire, is it really something that you should be involved in or not? How do you do that? First thing is, how does the Yetzer Hara fool us and make us think that things that are not good are really good? One way is the following. Every single thing in this world has good points and bad points. There's nothing that's totally good and nothing that's totally bad. That's the way the world is. Our job is to look at things and see if they're predominantly good or predominantly bad. Sure, every bad thing has some good points, but that doesn't make it good because predominantly it's bad. And every good thing has some bad points. That doesn't make it bad because predominantly it's good. So the first thing is cut off the hair. Sometimes the woman can be ugly as sin, but she has a nice hairdo, right? So it makes her look good. But you're focusing in on one part, and really predominantly the rest of it, forget about, right? So shave her head, meaning take a look again at the things that you've been involved in, and instead of being attracted by one thing that may be good, maybe the predominance is the bad things. So take away the things that attracted you and take a look and see what the rest of it looks like. That's the first thing. Secondly, the Yetzer Hara can sometimes, things can be very good on the spot, but what they lead to is very bad. So another opinion is, don't cut her nails. Let the nails grow so you can see that she looks disgusting with overgrown nails. Meaning, sometimes the thing that you're dealing with is good on the surface, but if you leave it, it's going to lead to bad things. So take that thing that you wanted and thought was good and don't fix it up. Let the nails grow. See what the implications are. See what's going to come from it. See that maybe that thing that looked fine and nice, maybe in time it's going to lead to terrible things. It's going to have terrible overgrown nails that are going to make it look not good. Next thing is, sometimes the Yetzer Hara says, yes, this thing is bad. It's bad. But he dresses it up and says, but you can use it for the good. Right? The Yetzer Hara comes to a person in the morning and says, you know, it's right not to get up to daven. It's right not to get up and go to daven. But if you stay in bed, there's going to be a good outcome from this. The good outcome will be you'll be rested, you'll be able to work better, you'll be a better employee, or you'll be able to learn Torah better if you're learning Torah. So true, it's not good to miss davening, but the Yetzer Hara puts a dress over the bad thing and dresses it up as the end justifies the means. The means don't feel that great, but the end is a good end. So that's called dressing it up, taking the bad thing and making it look good on the outside. That you have to take off that dress also. And then sometimes things are not bad in themselves, and they don't have any repercussions necessarily that are going to be bad, and they're not dressed up to the end justifies the means, but there's another problem. What do they stand for? One spoke about this, that the clothing, the Egyptian clothing, in the desert was fine, you could wear it. But in Egypt, if you wore it, it was made a statement, I want to be like an Egyptian. Long hair, I think we once gave the example. A man having long hair, right? Nothing intrinsically wrong with that. The Rakachover had long hair. A Nazir has long hair. But if you grow long hair to be like the Beatles, the statement you're making is a wrong thing. So many things, there may be nothing wrong with them intrinsically, but what are they connected to? That's why you let her cry for her mother and her father. Take a look at that desirable thing and see what its connection is. Who's it crying for? For two goyim. For her father and mother or goyim. Or, according to one opinion of the Gemara, for her idolatry, for her old religion. True, the woman may be great, but what's she connected to? Who are her parents? What's her religion? What's she connected? What's she crying for? If after you've put everything that you've done in the year, not because you really made a cheshbon, but because you just wanted it, now you look at it again in a new light, so certain things are going to be that taka, they're good things. Then those things marry. Keep with you. Bring them into the coming year. But if taka, you see that she's not what she thought. When you desired her, she looked great. But now that you've cut her hair, let her nails grow, taken off her beautiful clothing, right, and let her cry for her father and mother, you see that really, under all that, if what you wanted is not really good, then send her away. Don't take that into the coming year. That's what it has to do with Elul. And therefore it says, Yerach Yomim. A month can be referred to as a Chodesh. Chodesh means new. the newness of the month. Yerach comes from the changing phases of the moon. That's Yerach. Also Yoreach Lemoadim. The Yoreach marks times because of the changes in the moon. And Elul, Rosh Hashanah, you're supposed to start anew. Tiku b'chodesh shofar. But Elul is not new. Elul is taking a look at the same things you did during the year from a different perspective. Not new. It's just a change. Don't look at it the same way you looked at the whole year. Put it under the test of not a new look, but a different look from all these different vantage points. And if it stands the test, then keep it. Then continue it. If it doesn't stand the test, send it away. Leave it in the old year. Don't bring it with you into the coming year.